The Tom Woods Show, episode 2367.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. We all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Eric July is back on the show. How do you even describe a guy like Eric July? In fact, Eric, just today, I was talking to somebody who needed to have a website design. So I was telling him about the company you and I used. And I said, one of the signs that they were good companies, they were able to take a guy like Eric July, who's the front man of a band, who's got a show on the Blaze. He's a political commentator. He's also a gamer. He's got his own comic book company. And somehow they made a guy like that have a website that's not cluttered at all. That's really nice looking and gets you exactly where you want to go. So now here I am talking to you. I am going to ask you at the end how, in light of what's been going on in your life over the past year or so, you're going to be able to balance all this. But first of all, although I've talked to you on my School of Life program, I have not featured you on the Tom Woods Show since the success of Ripperverse. So let's start off by saying, congratulations, man. You made everybody proud.
Hey, man, I appreciate that big time. It has certainly been a long time coming. Obviously, I did not anticipate it to get to this level that it's at, but obviously blessed, thankful to be in the position, and I'm appreciative of all the support.
I am pretty convinced that most people listening will know a little bit about what we're talking about already, but there's going to be a chunk of people who don't know you or your project. So let's talk about what was the impetus behind, I mean, it is a big, big deal to go beyond commenting on the comic book world, obviously, to building your own company. It must have seemed almost like an insurmountable task. Where do I even start with this? So what got you thinking in this direction?
Well, I commentate and did all that commentary stuff for years on just the comic book industry, comic books in general. And I feel like God put me on this earth to create. I think that's telling in the fact that all of the things that I've done, the million things that I have my hands in, when I'm creating, I seem to get the most success. And I figured, why not be part of the solution as opposed to always griping about the problem? And it was also a great time. It was just a timing thing. I mean, you look at the state of the industry with all the commentary that I had. I mean, the industry was in shambles, right? So I figured this was a great time to do it. I had the finances to front myself. And yeah, it was a tall order. I mean, you're talking about building a universe. And also with the fact that the Ripperverse is not only a creative company, it's also a distribution company because we handle our own distribution. So that was another animal in itself. And I made sure that from the staffing on up and down, I just had to make sure that I did everything that I possibly could to put this in a position to succeed. And obviously we got the reception it is that we got because I believe that we took care of business elsewhere. So it was very difficult. It's not something that just generally any old Joe Blow can do. I just happen to be blessed with being creative as well as being a businessman because it could have went south. I invested almost $300,000 of my own money to launch this thing. And that's a lot of money to get tied up in a project like this. And yeah, it was obviously great timing. And I took it serious. Industry veterans, all a part of this project with artists that were involved in ISOM 1. So I set it up to succeed, and that's the best that you possibly can do. I expected to see a little success, but I thought about this a million ways, and no way did I see ISOM 1 being a $3.7 million campaign. That was unexpected, but it does show that we made the right decision there.
Now, I think some people in the media have portrayed what you're doing in a way that they think will appeal to their audience. They say, look at this guy. He's started a non-woke comic book company. Now, to some degree, that is what it is, but it's way, way more than that. Like, that's not your only criticism of the existing comic book worlds. So maybe you could fill in a little bit more deeply, let's say, exactly what your vision is. It's not just that we're not going to be woke. That's a negative thing. You have some positive ideas what you want to do here.
Absolutely. I mean, look, that's why all of our projects, as far as the promotional items, we don't mention anything about that. We don't mention anything about wokeness or anything. You know, that's just kind of a side effect making leftists mad. That was a side effect. That's just what happened. I set out to make good comics. And if you read our code of ethics, which we have live on our website, we also have on every single book that we drop on ISOM 1, ISOM 2, there is the Work Reverse Code of Ethics. And they go through elements of respecting a customer, also elements of continuity and canon issues that have faced and plagued this sort of industry, and the inability to keep up with your favorite characters because they companies that are publishers don't really do a great job of trying to make a cohesive timeline. So with that being said, it was always about creating something that was going to appeal to an actual demographic, an actual audience. And we set out to make good comics first. That was the number one thing that we attempted to do. We started with story. We started with world building. I spent a long time before I even wrote ISOM 1. I spent a lot of time in my universe Bible building entries. So I took a lot of time to do what it is that we were doing to put us in a position to succeed. And that's why I saw the level of success it is that it saw. It couldn't have just been like some, just non-woke, anti-woke thing or whatever they wanted to call it and saw success. That's just not good enough, to be completely honest.
Right. And everybody is jumping on the bandwagon of, look, I've got a non-woke this and a non-woke that. But just saying that you're not creepy and weird is not enough. I need to know you got a good quality product. So I know you're the brains behind the story, but who's doing the artwork?
Gabe El Tayeb is the colorist. He's the colorist of it. He's done a lot of work with DC, Marvel, Star Wars as a colorist, all-time industry veteran. He was actually initially on that Superman project where they made Superman's son gay. He was on that project as a colorist, and that's what did it for him, where he was like, I'm making this soulless sort of work. And Cliff Richards was the artist, the line artist. So all the pencils, all the ink, he did that, the actual drawing he did. And man, just one of the best in the business. Again, another DC, former DC guy, and just does great work. And look, to make something like this happen, that's who you have to surround yourself with. You have to have guys that know what it is they're doing, making sure that you're on the right track to succeed. And those guys are the utmost professionals as well. I mean, we had a great little workflow between us three, always in communication to make something like that happen. And you can see that when you read the book. And obviously, it's the same team on ISOM 2 as well. And it will be the same team on ISOM 3. I love to keep this team together and what they've done. And again, just making good work. We work great as a team. You can't see success unless you surround yourself with great people. And that also speaks to the employees of the Riververse.
Well, you start off with a story and some characters in your mind, and then you have to convey this to people who are going to render these things artistically. And then for the first time, you see what their mock-ups look like. And so I'm wondering, on that first time, are you thinking, I don't know how they got inside my brain, but that is exactly how I conceived of these characters or the way I wanted this story to be depicted? Or was it more of a, you're halfway there, guys, but I need this or that?
That's a good question. So we have an internal, his name is Marcos Rios. We have an internal concept artist who's been working with me for a while now. He was even doing stuff with me for like the personal branding stuff. And he's, again, our personal, he works day to day with the Riververse. So he's one of the few guys. Artists tend to be contractors. He's one of the few guys that are just like on our day-to-day team. And he helped me basically make all the characters presentable. And he gets it. This is why I brought him on as a full-time guy, because I remember giving him a sketch of ISOM's suit and him bringing it to life with the concept art. Just, he gets it. And same thing, I'm very detailed with how I explain and express these characters. So I try to give him the most that I can, but it's still just quite impressive. Like, yeah, some of them, there's like a minor tweak. Like, all right, well, she needs to have this, she needs to have that. But a lot of times he just gets it on the first try, second try, where it's like, I need the character to look like this. It's almost like he is in my brain. And those are the type of people that you got to keep around, because there is a rapport, there is a sort of cohesiveness, and you got to click. When you have that artist kind of writer's creative relationship there, that's something that you got to keep together. So I made sure we brought them all. We pay them well. And yeah, we're continuing to develop characters. Marcos also, with the other two books that are being released very soon, with Chuck Dixon's Alpha Corps and the Saska sisters, Yaira, he helped concept art those as well. So he's just all around great guy and just good at what he does.
Let's think back to when you released that first book and you were advertising that this is a, I guess, a 30-day campaign, and your goal was $100,000 in revenue, and you ended up bringing in, what, $1 million in like 24 hours?
Yeah, 30-hour mark, yep.
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, that was just completely insane. Now, I mean, maybe you thought you might exceed that initial goal, but was there a part of you that thought, I'm likely to hit $1 million in a day, or was that a genuine surprise?
Oh, no, not in a day. I tried to be realistic as possible, and I did believe, considering that there's other people like kind of in the alternative space that have had very successful campaigns. And I thought if I present something great, we make sure that everything's good to go, then we have a high chance of succeeding. And yeah, blasting through the campaign goal was part of that. However, you know, seeing $1 million in basically a day, no, that wasn't anything that I ever anticipated, nor did I anticipate $3.7 million over the course of 75 days. That just wasn't something that we anticipated, but it did speed a lot of stuff up. It came with challenges as well, because I'm still to this day, after a year, playing catch up to the demand. There's the implementation stuff that we have to make sure is good to go. And it's not an easy thing by any means, but I was looking at that number just climb up, and I'm like, okay, yeah, we kind of hit the jackpot here. But my mind's immediately going to, okay, well, this means more orders to fill. This means that I got to change.
There's just a little sense of more money, more problems kind of thing.
Yeah, most definitely. That's exactly what it was. So while you may be in shock a little bit there, you don't have a lot of time to sit there and bask in it, because you're like, wait a minute, this creates an all new set of challenges. It's a good promise to have. Any creative or any businessman would love to have those problems, but they're problems nonetheless. So we got to work immediately. I had to hire people. I had to grow my staff, all of that stuff. But make no mistake, it was a special thing. And for us to follow up with ISUM 2 and be able to, this is entering into, we're almost at 2 million and we're entering into another multi-million dollar campaign, which legitimizes it. So anybody that was trying to say, hey, one hit wonder, they can't say that, you know, at all. So it was legitimized by the audience, which is awesome, because that's who it's for. It's for the actual customers, the actual readers. And I'm just glad that this is something that resonates with longtime comic book readers, as well as people that wanted to get into them, but they maybe found getting comics from the big two or getting involved in that universe or something that was intimidating, or just, again, it was just convoluted mess and it was impossible to get into.
I remember at that time, I could barely get in touch with you. Like, you were at the warehouse, yeah. You were running around like a chicken with his head cut off. It was impossible. And I totally understood it. I thought, I don't know what I would do in his shoes.
Running with a chicken with his head cut off, that's perfect. It's a perfect way to put it. And it's like, because I'm sitting here like, wow, man, what in the world am I going to do here to meet up with this demand? I'm calling for reinforcements. I hired a lot of my close guys, turned my whole part-time staff into full-time guys. Most of the challenges, I'd argue, were with the fulfillment aspect of the distribution. You know, I hired one of my close friends, Brandon, to be the operations manager, and it made the job a lot easier, but I was there every day at the warehouse. And maybe, yeah, that's not the best use of my time, but it's what had to happen in order for us to complete that first campaign and catch up to our demand. So I was packing the hell out of those boxes and making sure that we got them out. So it was a process. It was a process, and I learned a lot for sure. We're going into the next campaign fulfillment, which is about to start soon enough. And we got new processes and we're implementing those, and what works and what doesn't. And, you know, we pivot on it if we have to. But yeah, that first campaign was nuts. I tell people all the time, you know, yeah, I'm sure I made this money, but certainly during that window, I've never worked that hard in my life. And I'm a hard worker in general, but nothing compares to that. Long days, long nights. And it was what it was. And I expected that and anticipated, maybe not to that degree, but it's something that, look, it's something you got to do. And this is why, again, it's not for everybody.
I think the way you handled this in terms of publicizing how much money was coming in also went a long way toward keeping the thing going, because now people are interested in it, not just because Eric July has launched this exciting new company, but now it's, well, I want to be part of this. This is a phenomenon. He's generated $1 million in basically a day, and now he's headed to 2 million, and now he's headed to 3 million. I'm not just going to sit on the sidelines of this. I got to be part of this. So the very fact that it was succeeding made it succeed even more because everybody wanted to be part of it.
Yeah, that was the cool thing about it. And really, Tom, that's why we implemented the campaign format. I loved what crowdfunding in general introduced to this game and the level of transparency. And I said, why don't we mimic that aspect, but we just treat it like a pre-order as opposed to like a crowdfunding campaign. So, you know, it gets fulfilled immediately. Things paid for already as far as like all the items. And that's what people love to see. They wanted to be a part of that. And they like to see that number go up. And again, it's just also a level of transparency that you don't generally see in our industry. Nobody really knows what books are Marvel or DC is selling. I mean, the best you could get years ago were Diamond, which was their distributor, telling you how much they sold to the retailers. But even then, I mean, you don't know how many of those ended up in those customers' actual hands. And now, none of those guys, the distributors of the big dogs, whether it be Diamond or Lunar or Penguin Random House, none of those guys tell you how much they're even selling to the retailers. So nobody knows. So it's a level of transparency that you don't get with the industry, which is cool, as well as you get to see the numbers kind of rise. So people like to be a part of that. And that's very well what this was. It's a very customer audience oriented movement. And that's also in the fact that we could pivot on certain things with the campaign. I could add this to the campaign. I could add this item and make a switch where I needed to. And that's just something that, again, a lot of guys, you're not able to do when you are like a mega corporation. That's the advantage of us and the independent kind of sector of this industry.
Hey, everybody, quick message from our friends at Crowd Health. You know, there are a lot of things that are dividing Americans these days. We're a very divided country. But one thing we can all agree on is that American healthcare is completely screwed up and that nobody likes dealing with health insurance. Nobody likes dealing with how opaque the process is, the increasing premiums, the deductibles getting larger, claims denials getting more common. We've talked on this show about how we've gotten into this mess, but in order to get out of it, you shouldn't have to wait for the U.S. Congress to come to its senses and fix things. There's a way you can secede right now. CrowdHealth will give you the peace of mind that insurance companies are not giving you. Your $50 a month membership includes the tools and services you need to get the highest quality healthcare, and that includes access to telemedicine visits, discounted prescriptions, so much more, and no doctors' networks. Plus, you'll have access to your own personal care advocate who will help you navigate the complexities of health events and even negotiate bills on your behalf. And of course, it wouldn't be CrowdHealth without The Crowd, a group of members just like you who help pay for each other's unexpected medical events. It's time you opt out of restrictive health insurance plans and let CrowdHealth help fit your healthcare needs. Get started today for just $50 per month. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/woods to get the healthcare you deserve. CrowdHealth is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com/woods. That's joincrowdhealth.com/woods. Talk to us now about some of the reaction, and particularly, oddly enough, the negative reaction to Ripaverse and your work.
Yeah, well, this is the most mild thing that I've ever done, right? I've never done anything comparable, like as far as in recent years, like over the last decade, hot takes aside, like this is the most mild, apolitical thing that I've done. And I've got the most pushback doing this. Got more pushback doing this than I did with Backwards or even doing stuff with being with Materia, Blaze. Like none of that stuff compares to what we dealt with here. And I think that a lot of that is because of what this means, right? A lot of people, particularly the authoritarian left, have gotten off on being basically in control of all of entertainment sectors. So kind of like what Backwards did, it's a jolt in the industry, but it's also like a shakeup because people are like, well, wait a minute, we can't really control these guys. And, you know, we sat up there and definitely with the rise of the cancellation as an idea, definitely going in 2015 and beyond, where people will come for your jobs, they try to get you out of the jobs in the event that they didn't like something you said, whether it be then or whether it be years ago. And for us, and the setup is, well, they can't do anything. There's literally nothing they can do. They can't come for the distributor. We are the distributor. They can't come for the creatives. We are the creatives. They can't come for the boss. I'm the boss. So all of their screeching is really just, it's into a void. But also a big thing is, and I say this all the time, it's about the audience. They have, for the last years, with major brands, basically insulted their audience, insulted customers. When they rejected some or didn't like something, longtime fans, they called racist, misogynistic, all this other stuff. And what the Ripaverse is watching those arguments be blown up in real time. Oh, the fact that people, they would never support a black character. Well, there's like some. They don't like female characters, whether it's Yaira, right? all of this stuff that they tried to levy on people, which we always knew was false, the Ripperverse disproves it just by mere existence. And it's not anything that it absolutely tries to do. It's just by default. So you combine that with the fact that they can't control it, you're getting the reaction it is that we get. And I've had more nasty things said about me than I ever have in my entire life. But it doesn't really matter end of the day, because there's nothing that they can do to stop us. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
It's crazy. I mean, I'm thinking about what you're saying right now. I'm thinking to myself, if you guys are upset about this, you really should listen to his podcast. you have no idea. You're going to be begging to have Ripperverse back after you hear the other sides of Eric July. I mean, and as you say, there's nothing ideological about it.
No, that's true. Like, everybody, for the most part, leaves their political stuff at the door. Ripperverse is creative because we focus on making good stories, focus on making good content for our audience. And yeah, like, again, all the hot takes and stuff that I've said over the years, this comic book universe is the least politically charged thing that I have done ever, as far as seeing the creative success it is that I have. And they hate me for it. They hate me for it because for them, they understand how important it was and is for them to keep control of this. I mean, we're seeing a reaction to me being at San Diego Comic-Con, which is a place that they think I'm not supposed to be at. Why would they host a guy that basically is the number one selling brand right now in independent comics? Why would an actual comic book conference have the guy that's the actual owner there? They don't like it. They just think that it's their space. It belongs to them, even though none of these characters they created, for the most part anyway, they just think it belongs to them. And what the Ripperverse is, it shows that there is an alternative sort of renaissance that is going to be in the creative space. That's going to be a thing. There's not much they can do to stop it. So, you know, this is them being faced with that reality.
I remember reading some people saying things like, yeah, the people who are buying these books from Eric, they're not even comic book people. They just like Eric for whatever reason, because of what he stands for or something. And they're not even comic book readers. Number one, that's not true of everybody. But even if it were partially true, so you're being criticized because you're bringing more people into comics. That's basically what they're saying. I mean, that's a great thing that you're reaching people who wouldn't normally read comics, isn't it?
And that goes to show that those people that say those types of things don't actually care about comics, because in any other space, that would be considered a good thing, right? Introducing more people to the medium, which means that inevitably so, and that's already happened, where you have people that have made iSum their first book, they go look for other books to go read as well. So that benefits the industry at large. But these guys don't actually care about the industry. They're just so ideologically obsessed that they can't see beyond that. So that would be a great thing. The fact that that's what the comic book industry hasn't been able to do for a very long time, which is why, despite the Marvel Cinematic Universe being as big as it once was, the unit sales were going down still, because they weren't really generating any level of enthusiasm and weren't converting those people into readers. This is something that the comic book industry had been able to do in the past. And we're an example of that. It still can be done. You can bring new readers on, both old and new, or, like, you know, younger folk, older folk. It doesn't matter. And that's what we did. And we're an example of that. And if they cared about comic books, they would see that as a great thing. And we're not talking about people that pretend to like it or people that talk about it on the internet and that's where the book stops. These are actual verified purchasers. These are people that are going out of their way to purchase an actual comic book and engage in this industry. And I don't see how anybody could see that as a negative, unless you just don't really care about this industry.
I was so happy to sit back and watch this that you may remember that sometimes I couldn't help myself in some of the Twitter threads. I had to go after some of these people. I just couldn't help it. Because I thought, these are people with 25 followers who have never done anything in their lives, never created anything, never taken a risk, never taken six figures of their own money and poured it into something that was an entrepreneurial gamble. None of this would ever occur to them. They'd never be in a position to be able to do it. But from the sideline, they're going to lob criticisms at you. Dumb, dumb, dumb guy criticisms. So I couldn't restrain myself. But all I can think of is the Eric July t-shirt I have, the Monetize Your Haters
shirt. Oh, yeah.
And you and I have talked about this, about how to deal with haters. And I have a kind of a system how I deal with them. Obviously, I don't respond to everybody who criticizes me, and I don't think that's a good idea even to try. Sometimes I'll do it if it's a really high-profile person, because then why not? But I don't always ignore people who are kind of like, let's say, nobodies either, if I think I can get some kind of advantage out of it. I don't feel obligated like I used to when I was a young kid and I just hated being criticized. So I would answer absolutely everybody. I don't do that anymore. But I don't just wait for the big guns to attack me before I counterattack. Sometimes I do it because I think I can get some laughs out of it. I can get some attention. And that generally indirectly is a way I can monetize them. And I think one of the things you did, in addition to keeping us posted all the time about the milestones you were reaching financially, was you would quote tweet critics and just absolutely maul them. And then your followers would then swarm. And then the followers swarming got the word out further. Hey, Eric has this comic book out. Maybe you were just doing it to let off steam, but if it was an actual strategy, it was brilliant, man.
Oh, no, that's exactly what it was. I mean, I'm being completely honest. It's the only reason why I engage like that, because I understand engagement definitely on these social media websites. I embody, let's say, this whole monetize your haters. I believe that my experience, and I agree with you 100%, sitting there responding to every single individual is an impossible thing. And even if you could, it's not necessarily anything that you maybe should do. However, the way that I see it is that a lot of these haters, you can't do anything about them. They're not going to go away. You can't ignore them away. This is what haters do. My argument has always been, why let them do it for free? If there is a way for me, and there's always the line, you know, I won't go, I understand coattail riders, and I'm really good at peeping game and understanding when there's like someone that's clearly trying to use my name to like boost their own projects. But like for a lot of these weirdos, they don't have anything going for them at all. And I can only benefit from quote tweeting them, laughing at some stupid it is that they said. So that's my thing, is make money off them. Make as much money off them as you realistically can, because that engagement means a lot. And that's what people see. I mean, so many folks came to the Ripperverse because of they saw people talking about it. And oftentimes it's some idiots saying something that just is foul and out of line, and they like get intrigued, right? And they go look into it and they're like, oh, this isn't so bad. This guy isn't so bad. What's the big deal? And now you've converted a new person that wouldn't have ever saw that had that engagement not happened. Now they're Ripperverse fans. So, you know, I'm double dipping right now, making money off the haters and then turning a lot of these people that just kind of pick up on it into enthusiastic customers. It galvanizes the troops is what I always say. And like I said, that's just something that I figured out along the way, that you can't get rid of these guys. So if you can use it to your benefit, I say go for it.
One practical, specific way people might consider doing this is something that I've done. I had a fairly high-profile critic. You know who he was. I don't want to bring it up again, but it was a crazy situation. But so the way I handled it was I said, all right, well, for the next 2 hours, you can take, I don't know, it was some percentage off at my libertyclassroom.com website. You can take such and such percentage off with coupon code, and I made the coupon code this guy's name.
Yeah.
And so that got attention.
How you do
people
it.
Laughed. I thought that was funny. But I pulled in some dough in that couple of hours. So that was a way I directly monetized that person.
That's how you do it. Like, it's absolutely genius. And that's what I mean. Like, you're the one that benefits from that. There's nothing you can do to stop these idiots from saying the things it is that they're saying. So why not? Why not use that to your benefit anyway? Because they're not going to go away. It's just something that it's so easy to do, and you might as well do it. So go for it. And that's why I commend you. I see what it is you do. I see what some of the other guys in our space do in order to like turn these guys into finances, turn this guy into money. And these guys are funding projects left or right with their stupidity. So I say keep it up.
So tell me, as somebody who I'm a fan of Eric July in general, the various things you do. At this point, you're in your second multi-million dollar campaign in the comic book world. How in the future do you plan to balance all the various things you do, including your music?
Well, that comes with getting my staff, I think, in the right spot. I am a guy that understands that you got to surround yourself with great people. The Ripperverse team, again, we converted all those guys over to full-time workers that were part-time and added a few here and there. And we're going to continue to add more with our warehouse staff. So my thing, in order to keep my hands kind of where they need to be and involved in so many stuff like the band, you know, we're shooting a music video going into August, actually the band, to kind of make our return, and putting good people in positions that I can trust them in are going to be so vital for me to be able to get to where I need to get. So me, I'm best suited and most useful to this brand and everything it is that I do in two ways. That's being the, obviously, the head honcho with the business stuff and creating. So I need to do as much of that as I realistically can. And a lot of the other stuff, I need to have people that I can trust kind of handling that. And, you know, we've done a great job doing that. Like I mentioned, like my groomsman in my wedding, Brandon, he's my operations manager. My financial operations manager, Alex, he's a freaking singer in Backwards. You know what I mean? One of the guitarists in Backwards. He's my video editor and he does a lot of stuff there. So I grab people that I knew that I could trust and I put them in great paying jobs so we can put some of this stuff at least on autopilot and they can manage that so I can get back to creating and focus on creating. And that's where I'm best suited. So it starts with really getting people that you can trust in positions. And again, you have to set them up for success there.
Can I just flat out ask, is there going to be more Backwards music?
Absolutely. We're sitting on a lot of songs, by the way. But the important thing is we are going to be recording two music videos on the first week of August, if I'm not mistaken. We're actually already supposed to do that. A family emergency came up with one of our members, so we didn't shoot it. So we had to push it back a month. So here we are, and we're going to shoot those, and we'll get those out, and we'll start releasing music along the way there. And yeah, I can't wait for people to hear these two songs that we're sitting on that are going to act as some of our singles. And yeah, that's a very important part of my ride. So I want to get back to that. And like I said, if I can just get this stuff on autopilot, I'll be able to produce more of that. And I'll be able to do all of what it is that I need to do as far as the creative space, the creative stuff and picking up and putting down things. But yeah, Backwards will for sure be back. And August, we're going to record this music video to take a little bit to get it edited because we're going all out with this stuff. And that'll mark our return.
I hate to call you a lucky man because luck is not part of it. I was going to say you're a lucky man, Eric July, but you know what I mean by that. You have a,
oh, of course,
you have a charmed life. Really, you do.
Absolutely. And I'm not oblivious to that idea. Like I am in a position that I got like several careers and some people would just want to get one of those, you know, that it is that I'm doing. So I'm blessed. I understand that. I've taken advantage of everything it is that comes, opportunity, all of that good stuff. And to succeed or fail, I'm going to give it everything it is that I got. But I am aware that I'm in a great position, which is why I take this stuff so serious, because I understand this is just, I'm being set up for success here by God. And I need to make sure that I'm taking advantage of that stuff.
All right. So the website then, ripaverse.com?
Yes, ripaverse.com. They will be able to, of course, keep up with the brand and what it is that we're doing. They click on the campaign part of the website and be able to keep up with pre-order campaigns that are running at the time. There's also other cool stuff. We got fan art contests that we're running and just so much stuff. We're very community oriented and we always try to do stuff to keep our ear to the streets, kind of boots on the ground thing. But, you know, you can catch up with everything it is that we're doing at Ripaverse at ripaverse.com. Visit the store, visit the campaigns. And, you know, again, we're very thankful for all the support that we have coming our way.
Well, let me just make a little appeal here that a lot of times people who listen to this show and yours, they're the type of people who they would like to have a better world. They'd like to have a world where the good guys build something instead of just sit around complaining about the bad guys. And here we have a case of somebody who actually did that. Eric actually went out and did that. He actually created something. And so that's the very kind of thing that we ought to support. And not just out of kind of a perceived loyalty to Eric, but also because he puts out good material also. But here's somebody who, instead of just sitting around complaining, and by the way, I sit around and complain, but I also create things. Yeah. And Eric has created something that just blew the roof off everybody's expectations, including his own. So I hope folks listening will head over to ripaverse.com, just the way it sounds, ripaverse.com. And get yourself a book or two and some merch. I wear my Ripaverse hat very proudly. I saw a guy, Eric, you know this. I saw a guy at the Orlando airport wearing a Ripaverse t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I left my wife in the dust. I said, hold on a minute. I'll be right back. I ran down the hall. And I said, wait, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. You're an Eric July fan? And so we got a picture together. So it's happening, folks. So be a part of it.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'm highly appreciative of that. This doesn't happen unless we have the word of mouth. We didn't spend a dime really in marketing on that first campaign. It was all organic. So people like yourself and others going around telling people about this project and everything in this that we're doing with this company is so vital to our success, which again, that's why we do everything it is that we do. And we make sure that we keep our ear to the streets, man. And whatever the customers want, we try to accommodate them. And I'm highly appreciative.
Well, again, best of luck, Eric. Not that you need it, but continued success to you and everybody else. Head to ripaverse.com and hope we can get more updates from you soon. I can't wait to hear that new music.
Absolutely. I appreciate that so much, Tom. And again, appreciate your support.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.